the June Freethinkers. My name is Phil Rylett. I'll be moderating today. I'll be in the chair for a year. But there's some house rules, then we'll get our names out there. We, for use of this room, we agree with the owner of the hotel to spend 80 pesos. Now you can eat during or eat after, or as long as you do the right thing and spend at least 80 pesos, you'll be happy, we're happy. Okay? As I say, my name's Phil. We'll do a quick round. I'm, you know, full-time here.
Oh.
Do you want to do a quick...
Okay. I'm Valerie Edwards.
Okay.
Sherry
Pilgrim,
full-time here.
Bryn Dixon,
full-time.
Glenn Dixon, also full-time.
Jack Olson, also full-time, past president.
I'm Jack Harris from San Juan Kosovo.
Okay.
Wow.
We've gone international.
You get the long-distance award.
The last time I ride the motorcycle.
A brave soul indeed.
I'm Henry Laxon, the secretary. I bug everybody to give me their emails, and I'm here full-time also.
Stevens, full-time, 9 years now.
I'm Charlie Garrett. We're down here for the summer, and we're renting Chad's house.
Thank you.
Beautiful house.
Where's Chandler?
Just for the summer.
Okay.
My name is Fred Sporrell. I'm originally from Montana. But I'm living in Reno, Nevada now, and I'm just down here checking out the place to see if I'd like to stay here. And I used to be the director of the Flathead Free Thought Forum Group up in Kalispell, Montana. It was the first one to have a kind of atheist booth at the county fair up there, which was exciting.
Right next to the paramilitary guys.
Right behind my booth, there was the Gideon's head of booth. So that was fun.
I'm Arden Murphy. I've been here 2 years in Tarayapta and here.
You're doing great, Arden. You're doing great.
Arden, is your email address hotmail.ca or com?
No.
CA.
Hotmail.ca.
Oh, our enemy.
Security risk.
If anyone is not, anybody not on the mailing list who wants to be on the mailing list, this is the list. I think we've caught everybody.
So I've been here 13 years. Would you like to buy my house?
Don't know if I can afford it.
Is there any more housekeeping?
Yeah.
Did I forget anything?
This is my wife, Corrine Garrett.
Nice to meet you.
We missed her.
Seems the women are in the minority. Well, we're going to
speak
up.
I don't think it was intentional.
That's it. I think the bridge groups have got the men beat, though.
Well, during the last few meetings, occasionally the issue of how active atheists should be has come up. And I heard various opinions, so for this meeting I decided to lock up the issue of politics and atheism and see whether they're just see what the opinions are on what atheists should do. And I found a paper, and I think it presents the arguments on both sides pretty fairly. So I'll read something out, it's about 10 minutes long, and then we can throw it open for discussion and opinion.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, there are a lot of names in this article. And this article was, it was a book length. So I've chopped pieces out. So those names may have been introduced earlier, in which case I'm just going to assume that you know who they are. The only thing one I recognize, well, Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris may be known to everyone, but there's a Gloria Chastain or something, Chastina. You may know them, I don't. You know, I don't know how famous they are on the atheist circuit. So forgive me if I drop a name and you don't know who it is. Okay, so politics and atheism. Now, the early years of the 21st century thrust issues around religion to the forefront of public and political debate And one of the defining features of this was the emergence of a more activist form of atheism, known as New Atheism, which sought to openly challenge and criticize religious beliefs and to promote the virtues of reason, rationality, and science. Fueled by a series of best-selling publications and accompanied by high levels of media interest, New Atheism soon became something of a cultural phenomenon. Political activism is one of the hallmarks of New Atheism. Comparing the huge discrepancies in the power and resources being commanded by atheism and religion in the United States, for example, Richard Dawkins makes the point abundantly clear. Our struggle, he says, is not so much an intellectual struggle as a political one. What are we going to do about it? On this basis, New Atheism adopts an avowedly critical posture towards religion, claiming that religious views have enjoyed a cosseted and excessively privileged treatment than any other viewpoint or opinion. Proponents of New Atheism call for religious beliefs to be exposed to scrutiny wherever they are found, in precisely the same way that one might critique politics, literature, or art. Though recognizing that not all religious views are equally noxious, this stance is nonetheless applied to all forms of religious beliefs, as well as attacking its more extreme varieties. Ostensibly moderate religious views are also challenged on the grounds that, while they may not necessarily be dangerous in and of themselves, they provide succor for more fundamentalist positions and help to sustain the cultural legitimacy of belief in unobservable supernatural forces. As Greta Christina writes, moderate and progressive religion still encourages the basic idea of faith, the idea that it's acceptable and even virtuous to believe in things that you have no good reason to think are true. One concern is the growing political influence of religion and involves a tension between declining levels of support for organized religion and the increasing political influence of religious groups. In the US, this is centered on the role of the Christian right, especially under the administration of George Bush, W. Bush. In Britain, issues of multiculturalism and faith schools have been particularly prominent. In this context, New Atheism can be said to represent something of a defensive rearguard action, an attempt to push back against the encroaching forces of faith, and a response to a world that, as Aronson observes, no longer seems to be going our way. Another factor centers on the apparent dangers of religious belief. This includes a variety of circumstances, from the influence of religion in individual cases of harm and abuse to its role in violent conflict. An obvious influence here has been the impact of Islamic terrorism, highlighted in its most graphic form by the attacks of 9/11 and their aftershocks in Madrid and London. Writing in the immediate aftermath of the attacks, Dawkins declared that it was now time to break the absurd taboo surrounding religious criticism, and that those of us who have for years politely concealed our contempt for the dangerous collective delusion of religion need to stand up and speak out. Things are different after September 11th, he said. Let's stop being so damn respectful. The character and development of New Atheism has also been shaped by the authority of science and the academy, especially pertinent in advanced technological societies such as the US and Britain, which has elevated the status of New Atheist advocates and their arguments, many of which attack religion from an avowedly scientific perspective. The critical line against New Atheism is based on a number of common tropes. These complaints that its proponents are over-polemical, aggressive, rude, and intolerant, have a superficial conception of religion or religious belief, and ironically, given that the assertion of a new atheism came from its opponents, offer little originality in terms of philosophical and intellectual argument. It is also regularly claimed that new atheism is an exclusive preserve of Western, white, male, intellectual elite, comprising of a fundamentalist ideologically right-wing worldview with imperialist, if not racist, undertones. Comparisons to totalitarian regimes, notably fascism and communism, are frequent too, with this being seen as indicative of the moral vacuum at the heart of atheism and its inability to offer positive values of its own beyond excoriating religion. Such claims, unsurprisingly, are strongly rejected by supporters of New Atheism as little more than a collection of straw men and caricatures. New Atheism is politically engaged in a variety of ways. One of the most notable involves ongoing efforts to reduce the influence of religion in the public sphere. In the US, a wide range of national level bodies have been established for this purpose. They include American Atheists, the Center for Inquiry, the Freedom from Religion Foundation, the Secular Coalition for America, the American Humanist Association, the Military Association of Atheists and Freethinkers, and the Council for Secular Humanism. A national atheist party aiming to influence electoral politics directly was established in March 2011. These organizations are actively involved in a number of common campaign issues. One of the principal themes is their opposition to religious influence over public policy. Prominent, too, have been vigorous efforts to ensure or maintain a secular public sphere. In the US, this has centered on campaigns pursued through the courts to keep state buildings, land and offices free from religious symbols and ceremonies. Notable campaigns have included opposition to nativity scenes in public parks, prayer banners in public schools, displays of the Ten Commandments around courthouses, and calls for a day of prayer by federally elected officials. Ongoing attempts to remove the phrase "under God" from the Pledge of Allegiance and "in God we trust" from the American currency have also been contentious, as has a legal bid from American Atheists opposing the display of a cross-shaped section of rubble found at the wreckage of 9/11 in the partially state-funded National September 11th Memorial and Museum. The largest of non-religious organizations in the U.S., the Freedom From Religious Foundation, had an income of $2,234,000 with an estimated membership of 18,000. But research from the U.S. has also revealed there to be more than 200 religious organizations involved in national-level lobbying, with a grand total of $350 million a year being dedicated to this purpose. Almost through. One of the central issues here is the question of branding, namely whether New Atheists should actively describe themselves as such, or whether the adoption of an alternative label would be more politically expedient. Sam Harris, for example, has argued that the continued use of the term atheism, as defined purely by its relationship to religion, has been a mistake of some consequence, and that has contributed to the marginalization of atheism as little more than a cranky subculture. Instead, Harris argues for the rejection of all labels, maintaining that there is no reason for us to fight in well-ordered ranks like the redcoats of atheism, and that victory will only be achieved when the very notion of God is no longer taken seriously, and atheism becomes scarcely intelligible as a concept. Not all, however, agree with the position. Indeed, for some, the very idea of surrendering the term atheism at a time when religious ideas remain so pervasive is an anathema. According to P.Z. Myers, any adoption of a new label would merely lead to the supplicant being treated with the same contemptuous sneer, and that in any case, labels remain politically useful tools, providing rallying cries for the tiny scattered bubbles of rationality drifting in the sea of superstition and ignorance. Another fault line is between non-religious and subgroups concerns the zero tolerance approach taken by atheists towards religious beliefs. This is considered by many within the broader non-religious community to be divisive, polarizing, and ultimately counterproductive, driving religious believers further into their trenches and alienating potential supporters. Accordingly, many favor a more accommodating approach, maintaining that forging alliances with moderate religious groups on issues of common concern, such as tackling fundamentalism, promoting secular government, and supporting science education, is likely to be more politically fruitful. Paul Kurtz, founder of the Council for Secular Humanism and the Center for Inquiry, for example, claims that the confrontational tactics may have raised the visibility of new atheism, but its fervent attacks on religion have been a strategic blunder, given the need to appeal to a wider base of support. In the same vein, the interfaith activist Chris Stedman claims that denigrating religious beliefs condemns us to a permanent minority status. Alain de Botton, too, has called for a new wave of atheism, incorporating what he considers to be a more positive and useful elements of religion, such as its use of ritual and architecture, to supplant the overly negative approach taken by new atheists. Such claims, however, are brusquely dismissed by new atheists themselves, who argue that a confrontational approach remains necessary to attract attention and promote social change, and that accommodation amounts to little more than passive acquiescence in religious privilege. So, that's the piece. So, we should have enough to chew on here.
I'm very suspicious of religious people. They're telling atheists how best to proceed.
Okay, that's a good point.
Early to take advice from them.
Even if it's perceived that we have a common enemy, that fundamentalists will be as detrimental to the moderate religious believers as atheists.
You're talking about forging alliances with moderate Christians that believe in secularism.
Are we both enemies of fundamentalism?
I think we both disagree with fundamentalism, but I don't really see a political movement here. Religion is dying on its own. Nobody needs to push it. Mm-hmm. The atheists can do that, can push it along a little bit, but the reason why atheists have a voice today is simply because religion has been melting.
Mm-hmm. Or has it been changing? No. More of a political movement, but still has its underpinnings as, you know, this... their authority comes from the divine.
I would say it hasn't been melting, given who was elected last time.
Well, we got two different things we can look at. In terms of government, it's more invasive than ever.
Right.
But in terms of voters, popular opinion,
and in voters, I mean, they all voted for him. it's not that somebody chose him. There's millions, and they're still voting for him.
Yeah,
there's millions out there.
Yeah, but you do have to look at, you know, we're again talking from an American perspective and not a global perspective of what's happening.
Sure.
And so I would suggest, and I sat today because Bertrand Russell has always been a hero of mine, him being very much an activist in the 60s, right? A brilliant man. And so he, I'd look up on YouTube 1927 speech that he gave to the secular council in Britain. And, you know, we always consider the British as being stodgy. But when we moved to London...
We did?
Yes, we did.
Don't tell Bill.
But in 68, when we moved to London after Bobby was shot...
that's okay.
I found out that the British certainly were not stodgy and were much more ahead than we were as a culture.
Absolutely.
And so, and Bertrand Russell also did talk, and this, it's an hour long speech, and I recommend.
You're going to keep it short, right?
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
I am. The ghost will tell me right here. Shut up. But anyway, he did explain about tolerance for other ideas.
Yeah.
And he certainly was a humanist, and there's a lot in that speech that I suggest all of us listen to, because we've already come farther along than what he said in 1927. but instead of being confrontational.
Okay.
I think you need all of those people. You know, you need the guys who are going to go and say, get that thing off the courthouse steps, the confrontational guys. You need the guys who are going to try and merge, not merge, but help out and make alliances. And, you know, it's, and the most important thing I think you need is education. If you get enough education
into the right type.
Well, just the truth. Just yes, the truth. Yes. If you just have enough, if you're well enough educated, I think you become less and less religious. It's almost inevitable.
That's right. Although the last meeting we did talk about the propensity towards religious belief, and in the Scandinavian countries where religious belief has been declining sharply, and while people may identify themselves as atheist by label, there's still a strong belief in the supernatural.
But they're already a lot smarter than us. They all speak English better than any American.
I was going to shoot it in a different direction.
Okay.
I'm looking at the evangelicals, kind of, you know, let's say elected in some sense Trump. How do they sit back every day from what they purport to be their beliefs and sit here and take this day after day of almost a demon, you know, going just every different 180 degrees from what I think they believe in. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't see how they put up with it. You know, that
because of the politicization. It's because they believe he will Christianize the law.
Yeah, see, so
he's
and justifies the means.
Right. Everything can be forgiven.
Yeah. The civic world. Yeah. And then they don't care what else he does.
Absolutely right.
He will
do that. Should atheists or secular humanists go that direction? Looking at the evangelicals have sold their soul for what they believe in, you know, in a political way to get what they want. Because I think the reason they did it is because they were such a minor, they were kind of minor, you know, and they wanted to be in the big dog camp.
So you're advocating that we should be more political?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just putting it out.
Yeah.
What I'm advocating is that I don't know how you people feel when you get about a mixed group and they start talking religion, but what I say immediately, if it's in a group, I don't care who it is, I'll say, well, I'm a born-again atheist. Now, that rings a bell. Okay, and you know, so I get a conversation going. And the thing is if you can imagine the gay community 50 years ago, a person would be very embarrassed to say they were gay. Now, a person, if they say they're gay and they're able to get elected, mm-hmm. they're able to communicate with other people. Mm-hmm. I have close friends that are gay. So when I headed up my group, you know, this is like we're talking to people that believe the same thing. Yeah. But we should talk to people that don't understand us and not be afraid to bring it up. But people are. They're afraid they might lose their job. Yeah. They're afraid they might lose their friends. And so I'm saying, we're at the beginning of where the gay group was 50 years ago, and eventually it will, once people say that, well, this guy's pretty nice, this woman's very nice, and she's an atheist. So
what do you think the gays did to gain acceptance that we can learn from?
What they did is they slowly confronted the rest of the group. They went out there and just said, you know, we're gay, and eventually people found out, well, the gays weren't that
bad. I think what gays... They did it by
violent protests starting in San Francisco. A la Harvey Milk and the people said we're going to take over the streets. And in that area, and then elected people from that section so that they actually had a voice. It wasn't a question of slowly. It was the people who slowly tried to write about themselves being gay just sloughed off.
I'm sorry, but it was in New York City.
Summer of 69.
Right.
I think it was Willie Grace.
Harvey Milk took that.
And they
took
the name gay divorcee, and they took the name gay.
I think Willie Grace did it. I think presenting gay people as normal people leading normal lives. And then allowing people to say, I am gay, and people go, oh, I know that person, I like him. That slowly built up to where people realize that this isn't some evil thing. You know, for us to declare openly with our friends, I'm an atheist, I think takes us a long way.
Yeah, but I must contest, how did that get into the media? And it long came before with the New York group and how we moved along with that.
What was that called? White something?
But I think that, you know, and Hollywood was always pretty gay.
That confrontation, that bar.
You know, you're my friend. Mm-hmm. I'm your friend. I like you. I don't care that you're an atheist. I don't care that you're gay. I don't care that you're black. I don't care that you're Jewish. I don't care that you're Catholic. I don't care that you think a frog is a deity. Whatever your thing is, I like you because I like you.
So should I declare myself to you then?
Absolutely.
As an atheist?
Sure.
Or should it not make any difference?
It shouldn't make any difference, and you should declare. Because, you know, if that is your faith, then that is your faith. It's no different than telling somebody, and down south, let me tell you, I'm from Florida.
I'm in Miami.
In Florida?
Or Florida.
The southern states, especially if you go Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi, Louisiana, the first thing they ask you is what church you go to. Because we got to know if you're Presbyterian or Methodist or
really
Baptist.
Southern.
Oh, yes, no, wait a minute. That's not true. No, well, I'm a
but it is, it's an affiliation.
Yeah, we can keep the,
it's a group, it's a tribe. And if we can get the tribes to unite, like the thing with the Ten Commandments on the courthouse steps.
Yeah.
The Jewish people don't think very kindly of that. Neither do the people from the Middle East. Neither do the atheists.
The Jews don't like the Ten Commandments?
I'm sorry?
The Jews don't like the Ten Commandments?
The Ten Commandments are fine. If you don't kill me, I'm down with it.
But you said
I'm
the Jews,
down with it.
You said the Jews don't like that.
They were Jewish.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, if we can find a commonality there, then we can attack these issues.
Well, yeah.
We need to find the foot in the door, the commonality. Why do I like you? I like you because you and I like orange sherbet.
But the actual Ten Commandments everybody uses is not the actual Ten Commandments that's in the Bible.
No.
Well, there
the
are
Ten
all
Commandments. The Ten Commandments is thou shalt not boil a kid in its mother's milk, according to Exodus something. You know
that? Yeah.
And that's the only, the only chapter that, according to the Bible, that God said, this is the commandments that I give to you, was the one that listed the bunch of crazy commandments.
Maybe that's a bad example, because I can stand shoulder to shoulder with Jewish people, black people, Latino people, Methodists, Presbyterians, Catholics, I can stand shoulder to shoulder with them and say what this president is doing to the United States of America by taking children hostage and creating a human, an international human crisis is wrong.
Oh, he just changed that. And it's all Obama's fault anyway.
And the Democrats.
And the Democrats.
That's right.
It's the wall that
all of these factions can line up against child hostage taking.
We're going to get back to the topic.
Sandy. Yes, I just want to share a memory. I was, when I was in my early 20s, and this was long before Christopher Hitchens or all those other, you know.
If you guys speak up at the end of the table, the rest
okay,
of
okay, so I was in my early 20s in a college class, and talking to the girl next to me about my age, and I told her I don't believe in God. I can't remember how it came up, and she got this shock look on her face.
Yeah.
And she, oh, you don't believe in God? And she sits there a couple of minutes. She goes, I don't either, but I never would have thought I could have said it out loud.
That's what I'm saying. That's what
and I think there's a lot of that going around out there that people are just they feel backed into a corner. They feel like you said it's going to affect them in some way,
right.
And they're afraid to say it. And the more other people say it, the more they get the courage to say it.
And that's what I was getting at. You got to bring it up.
So we have a duty.
We have a duty
to declare it.
Bring the sanity. I had a big conversation with the JWs the other day. I love talking to them. I love talking to the Mormons. I won't let them get out of my house. They scream.
I'm the same. Come on in. I'll lock the door behind you.
I'm sitting there quoting scripture to some of these Jehovah's Witnesses. Oh, that's not in the Bible. And I say, well, read that. Well, you know, it was great. Finally, they left me.
You know, I don't know if somebody else brought it up, but the gay people stole that word, gay.
Yeah.
Back in the 40s, I would guess. And quite possibly, I'd say, from a standpoint of politics, that was a good idea. Also, the word atheist is anathema to most people. And I think perhaps a word like being secular would be a plus. That's other people that you could team up with where they may not be atheists, but they share a number of the same views. So, and as far as getting into politics, I read up on that a little bit. The group least likely to be voted for into a political office is an atheist.
An admitted one.
Say yes.
Admitted. Yes, there are plenty of atheists in the government.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
An open
declared atheist, forget it. You're not going to.
How about an atheist versus a pedophile?
Yeah.
Say what?
Atheist versus a pedophile.
That's a tough choice.
I mean, I would say, as far as politics, that word atheist has to go.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with you because I certainly know about branding, which you brought up in your talk about branding. And you have to be very close in the usage of a word, which has such an incredible impact. And I think we should get back to talking about groups and why we are here in this situation.
Talking about labels. Was it Dawkins that came up with brights?
Yeah, they went anywhere.
Was it Dawkins that came up with that? Brights?
Yeah, that's analogous to gay.
Yeah, what do we think about it? Does it sound too arrogant?
Well, the idea of using secular, which he said, will get you through politics a lot faster because people now, this growth of populism, which Fareed Zakaria just wrote about, is from the younger people who are not involved with religion and are involved with and they're calling themselves secular.
Right.
And that's going down of the religious elements now.
Yep.
And so secular was much more powerful to get you through.
Theists can be secular too.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Humanist or whatever.
Both.
Humanist, I don't even understand what that means.
Yeah.
What's a humanist? I don't understand.
It basically means that humans are more important than dogma.
Yeah, right.
I understand.
Chad, you
understand. Well, I was just going to say, the word atheist, I was born in a quasi cult before I became a born again atheist. But, I ran across some t-shirts. And the one I just loved, which I haven't seen anybody wear it, but it'd be nice to see a lot of people wear it. It just says, "This is what an atheist looks like." You know, you're fat, you're skinny, you're part of the community. This is what an atheist looks like. But I think the word atheist, where I grew up, that was next to being murder.
Yeah.
Is it?
A murderer.
Still. Murderer?
Yeah.
Well, immoral.
An atheist.
Yeah. What do you think of the, I don't know who put this forward, whether it's Harris or Dawkins, but everyone's an atheist for some god. You know, you're an atheist as far as Zeus and Jupiter and...
I think it's Sam Harris that said, "I just believe in atheists."
One less god. Is that a valid point to make? Because people can then identify with your point of view that, yes, I know what it's like not to believe
in some god.
In a god, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a good point. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love that one. I use it all the time. You know.
Yeah.
I think the secular label is very important, specifically from a political standpoint, because it unites groups. Mm-hmm. It unites us with other groups who also don't want to see a populist president being basically run by the evangelical wing of the Christian church, or at least co-opted with each other on that. And also, side note, but it's, you know, for example, when it comes to Trump, I'm sure we'd find quite a bit in common at the voting booth with the Muslim community in the United States.
Yeah.
So if we want to be
Sam Harris and Dawkins and the new atheists and rant about 80% of everything you say is anti-Muslim, you're going to find yourself in line with populism both in the UK and here and other countries in Europe which are leaning fascist. You're going to be right in line with them, and I don't think that's where I personally, as a secularist or as an atheist, want to be. You know, I look online and see photos of our former pastor, who was actually at our wedding, sitting in the White House and posing with Trump. You know, that's not where I want to be. So I think secular is a great focus, and looking to cooperate with other groups, regardless of their religious beliefs. From a political standpoint, that's something that you really have to do, unless you're already in the majority position.
So you believe that the enemy of our enemy is still our enemy?
I'm not sure.
Another thing politically, from what I understand, a lot of God-fearing people think that atheists are immoral.
Amoral.
Okay.
Right.
And it might be helpful to, from a political standpoint, for atheists to develop some kind of a moral code so that the outlying people can identify, in fact, I would say probably most of us, with one or two exceptions in the Ten Commandments, go with the Ten Commandments, okay?
What's that
exactly?
No.
Say what?
Ten Commandments aren't very appealing to an atheist. The first four are all about God.
Yeah.
But, because my thing is, probably the Ten Commandments didn't come down from God. They came down from society. So, and that they were just modified. But I think that from a political standpoint, it would be good to have a code of conduct.
Does one exist for atheists? Is there an atheist?
There's nothing to atheism.
No, it's
a vacuum.
Yeah.
I'm a secular humanist.
Yeah.
You might be some other kind of atheist. And there is a code of secular humanism. The affirmations of secular humanism have been written out by Paul Kurtz.
Okay. Well, that could be publicized, enhanced, so that especially if it deals with the secular
humanism
movement, then, but I think that's as I was reading, that's one of the things a lot of people, as the moment you say atheist, they think no moral underpinnings.
You know, to comment on what you just said, that I've been an atheist for my entire life, and I've never heard of that. So, it can't be very well known. I mean, it's known to you. How many people have heard of that?
Sexual.
No, the
affirmations of humanism.
One out of all of us?
Yeah.
Now say that again.
Nobody else?
What was the question?
How many people have heard of the affirmations of secular
humanism? No, affirmations of humanism.
Affirmations of humanism.
Yeah. It just says that we trust science more than superstition.
Yeah, I believe it. I'm sure I believe everything it says, but I've never heard of that term in my life until today.
Okay, well, everybody should look that up then.
He's poorly disseminated.
Well, they're not evangelical. That's
yeah, we don't have. There's no organized atheism. Yeah, it's nobody like, promoting it.
Because we're more like cats.
We don't have missionaries.
We're more like cats than dogs.
Okay. Oh, John, did you have...
That's a problem.
Did you want to say something?
Humanist.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. We're all humanists.
Okay.
Yeah. When I was a sold out evangelical Christian, when somebody said atheist, I thought they were coven devil worshippers.
God hater.
Yeah, I mean, absolute
evil.
Devil worshippers.
Trying to find ways to sin.
Right.
And that's what all of the people that I knew believed.
Yeah.
I mean, they were the worst of the worst ever to live.
So they say we should infiltrate religion.
I mean, when you, that word atheist is just the worst thing in the world to an evangelical.
Yeah, isn't that sad?
Well, that's the argument for taking the word back instead of euphemisms,
right.
Like free thinkers. And and skeptics and agnostics and all the other words that people use because they're afraid of the word atheist.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But, I think that the concept of atheism is an individual concept. The fact that we gather together may be to, if not confront, but to be a bulwark against the religious onslaught that exists. Now, the concept of morality is very, very culturally devised. And we can't deny that what we ascribe to on the so-called Western, or whether you want to call them Christian or not, more Judeo-Christian morals, that's what they are, because, you know, the people who do jihad, the people who do honor killings and so on, feel that they're doing this in the name of God and so on. Now, we don't fear, I think the reason that we're atheistic or atheists is that we don't have a fear of burning in hell. And most of these other religions are based upon some fear of what's going to transpire in the afterlife. And we say, well, we just, not even unaware of it, we just really don't believe in it. But banding together, once you define yourself as a group, then some people say, well, atheism is a religion. But that also depends upon when you have to define what really constitutes a religion. And it's not a religion in the sense that we're just rational thinking and saying we don't have any fear of these other things. In terms of practicalities, in terms of what we can do to be recognized, what we can do to be a force that's not discriminated against, is we have to demonstrate a sharing of some of the moral. Killing is bad. There are other things. Hurting another person is bad. And even the tenets of Unitarian Universalism, except for the one that talks about some supreme being or power, they're really good in terms of interactions among people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it behooves us, if we want to be able to become accepted and to become not a unified, homogeneous force against other forces, is just to be able to demonstrate the concepts of goodness and morality and not being hurtful and trying to be helpful to other people, and that this is completely independent of any religious construct.
Okay, so at an individual level, we should demonstrate our worth.
Good for goodness sake.
I think one of the problems with atheism as a label is it defines us by what we don't believe in, which is weird. You know, there's lots and lots of things everybody doesn't believe in. You know, like there's that whole thing about the, you know, you have faith that there's a black teapot going around the asteroid belt. How can you prove there isn't? But nobody is an ateaponist. You know, you were listening to something yesterday, I think, while you probably were preparing for this, where they basically said it shouldn't define you. What you don't believe in, and I think exactly what you're talking about. People, you know, I don't have a religion. Well, you're an atheist. That's your religion. You know, it's like no, it's not. It's the absence of something. It's not the presence of something. You know, and just to get people, and atheists are as different. You know, I mean, get 100 in a room, and they're all going to have different.
I like to say
some of them are going to be murderers.
But
some are going to come.
I like to tell people my atheism plays the same role in my life as my
A-leprechaunism
and my A-vampirism. I mean, actually, none of my ideas spring from that. And they all derive from the same two beliefs, that there should be a reason to believe something, and I don't have a reason to believe that.
Very good.
Yeah. Now, when we're interacting with a believer, I know you do a lot of it.
Yeah.
your aim or goal? I mean, you're obviously not going to convert them.
Well, it's entertainment mostly.
Yeah.
Well,
I feel the same way about the Jehovah's Witnesses, right?
That's true.
I mean, it's for entertainment purposes.
Yeah. Yeah. Once I'm talking to them, and I talked to them for like an hour, and I says, you know, everything I'm saying, I know due to the fact you're preconceived, biased opinions, you cannot possibly agree with me. But I says, whatever I said, sometime in the future, you're going to think about some of the things I said and say, oh, this guy said that, you know, and that is probably true. And you won't admit it to yourself because you can't admit it to yourself because everybody wants to be right. And one thing I also wanted to say is that's what helping the cause is people like Bill Maher on television.
Yeah, I love
Ricky Gervais and a lot of these famous atheists are coming out right on shows and talking about it. And that makes it, again, starting to be more acceptable. And it's a slow process. But you couldn't imagine that happening.
George Carlin was great for as long as he lasted.
Oh, he was wonderful. Yeah.
So can you give us an example of your interaction with believers and how you think?
Well, typically we'll be talking about something like the difference between evolution and creationism. And they're given an argument for why evolution isn't a good theory and it shouldn't be believed. I said, but I can use evolution. I said, I mean, whether it's right or wrong, it unifies a lot of data. It makes predictions. It's actually improved the human condition. I mean, this is an idea that I can use. You can argue all you want, but your creationism, even if it's true, is useless. It's a useless idea. Well, it is, isn't it? Because even if creationism is true, we can't use that idea for anything at all. That would be a typical kind of argument.
Phil?
Yeah? Oh, sorry.
Okay, so I wanted
to... Oh, yeah, oh, sorry. I thought you pointed to you somewhere else. Well, that's true. This end of the table, Valerie, you have the you have the table on the floor.
Yeah, because Bill Maher also said, we lived in Europe for 10 years in different countries, and I just was back in Barcelona for 3 months enjoying the revolution, but on both sides, okay? So... it's a very secular city. It did not celebrate Christmas. I wanted to know why. But also, Bill Maher said, you know, Europeans are adults and we're still children. And I so agree with that. Because the Privy Council in England, stodgy old England, with an argument between the Bishop of York and Canterbury, did away with the notion of hell years and years and years ago. And that's what I found living in Europe and raising my daughters in Europe, that there wasn't this heaven and hell mentality, religious mentality that we were so indoctrinated with in the United States, except for the Unitarian Church. But in all other churches, all other Protestant churches, heaven and hell was, you know, if you did the wrong thing, you were going to hell. So I just found that we should look much more closely at other cultures to see how long they have survived and how well they've survived. Unfortunately, you have to look carefully at Italy, that's now got another Mussolini, but Spain has just brought in a leftist president, and the cultures are different, but they teach us a lot, and we should learn from them.
Why? I mean, you mentioned Europe as being the model, but... I got to believe that Australia, New Zealand, Canada, I don't
only 4% of Japanese people believe in God. Yeah. 4%.
So why is the U.S. an outlier in developed world?
Nobody countries? Can answer that question. The usual answer you get is Puritan heritage, but I don't think that's an adequate answer.
Money.
But then why isn't the same thing happening in Denmark? And Germany and the Netherlands.
I think mainly because the Europe has gone through and knows what it is to kill each other over religion more than the United States.
Maybe it's geography that is.
No, it's the the Catholics versus the Protestants. Okay. They went through. They killed millions. Just like the Muslims would like to do today is kill millions, and they suffered through it. They have that cultural history, that cultural background. America, there's been very little one religion trying to kill the other one, but England just, they went from Protestant queen to Catholic queen to Protestant king to Catholic king. Every time it was
and
a purge.
And then to the wedding.
Yeah. Okay,
frankly, I think you have a separate culture from religion.
Hang on,
because if you look at the refugees who come to various countries, they bring their religion with them, but they don't have a feeling for the culture in which they have been placed. So it's a very dangerous thought, I think, that we demand from refugees that they come here and integrate into our culture and leave a lot of their precepts about their religion. behind. It just doesn't work. And there's a lot written about that, and it's fascinating. So when you talk about religion and culture is one thing, it is not. And I came here to hear about how atheists need to have a sense of humor about who they are. I mean, come on.
Yeah, you don't want more Bill Maher and Josh Carlin and Ricky Gervais.
And if you think that in Europe, because I've lived in many countries, that their religious beliefs are declining, they are, especially in Italy. The old folks go to church, the young folks go to church.
Exactly.
So,
yeah. All across Europe.
And the United States.
I have t-shirts. Is that available?
Yes, it is.
On Amazon or?
I don't know what the website is.
Would you put it on the mailing list?
Google.
Because I would like to, I'll buy one for everybody here if you'll wear it.
I won't wear it.
Why not?
Wear what?
A t-shirt that says you're an atheist?
Yeah. This is what an atheist looks like.
Would you wear it if it said you were a
secularist? This is what an atheist looks like.
Who do you want?
I think that's a great
wearing
slogan.
Wearing a uniform. Mm-hmm.
Do we need a uniform?
It's science.
I think
and I don't look good in t-shirts anyway.
Oh, that's
I got it.
I'll get you a button.
Or cut off sleeves. Either one. I don't want it. Anyway, getting back to this, I thought the meeting was something about should we be getting involved in politics.
Should atheists become a political force? Mm-hmm.
And I would say yes. And
secularists should.
And what are the steps to achieve that if people thought that that was a viable thing?
Okay.
Wasn't that the root of the conversation?
Yes.
So, I mean, it presented both sides. Right? On one side, people can think what they like, right? And it's only what they do that counts.
Well, that's why I'm asking,
on the other side,
all we're doing is just discussing the different from, you know, from a sense of, oh, maybe we should, maybe we shouldn't. Or is this possibly a path that could be taken?
Are we recruiting, you mean? Are we forming our own body?
That's what I'm asking.
No, it's a valid point.
Is there a path that could be followed?
I don't know about the organizations that exist now and their political lobbying. I don't know. I don't know what they...
I would say the Freedom From Religion Foundation is probably the strongest.
Yeah. Well, Freedom From Religious Foundation is where that t-shirt comes from.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It would be ffrf.org.
Okay. They're very political and they've done a lot of good.
Yeah. What do you think about the attitudes...
Write that down.
In Mexico.
He wants an address.
Mexico is ostensibly a Catholic country.
Yeah.
Yep. But it has a very strong separation of churches.
But it does.
Like Italy. I live in Italy for 10 years.
It's a Catholic population, but a secular government.
That's Europe. That's not.
Because, but you know, marriage here, a priest cannot legally marry two people. A priest can only marry them in the church. They have to go have a civil ceremony.
Right.
And they don't have to have a religious ceremony. There's a very strong line here between church and state.
Oh,
yes.
The other way around.
No.
A priest cannot be
married.
Definitely
not.
Maybe in Italy.
A priest-only marriage is not legal?
Right.
A priest-only marriage is not a legal marriage. It's not the civil contract. And that's why some of the gay rights won't prove so easily here, because they already have the concept of a completely separate civil contract that has nothing to do with religion.
Yeah.
There's still some issues around that.
And sometimes it's the family won't permit the couple to move into their house until they've had a church wedding. But
she
it's still
she
legal.
In the government a month before she married in the church, but she didn't live with the guy because she married in the church.
So as an atheist, whatever that is, I'm a woman first anyway, how do we lobby as a group without saying who we are? Because I think that's totally unimportant. When you have a great big issue like these kids, you know, in detention camps, what does it matter who we are? I mean, what matters is action, it seems to me. What does it matter?
But see, that's humanism. The dogma is rules are rules and you have to follow the rules. Humanism is saying no, only what's good for humans.
Yes.
And that rule is not good for humans. And so that's where you identify which you are. Mm-hmm.
Do we have to identify as a group? Is every group out there protesting for a political cause, whatever it may be? Is everyone in that group standing up and saying, I may fill in the blank? Or are they just protesting what subject du jour is?
My only interest is separation of church and state. People can believe they can be in whatever religion they want to be in, but as soon as they try to push it back into the government, that's where I draw the line.
However, in that, the argument made here is that it gives sucker to non-rational thinking, and eventually it will pop its head up.
The tax break for
right.
churches and stuff
it prepares
like
people for the climate change problem.
Yes.
You know, you learn to think by faith when you're 3 or 4 years old, and then you vote by faith, and then you make decisions about climate change by faith, and it's just a bad idea all the way.
So is it important that we challenge all irrational thought?
Yes.
Even if that irrational thought does not manifest itself in action.
But that would not be the purview of any kind of political organization, unless you want to pass laws to make religion illegal. I'm just saying there's politics where, you know, I think we can all agree on the secularity of government in enforcing that, what should be a bright wall. And the other angle or the other aspect of activism that we as secularists, as atheists might want to engage in, which is generally trying to enlighten the masses about religion and supernaturalism and superstition, which I don't know that there's a political factor to that directly, other than both the secular and, you know, laws like maybe it doesn't matter what your religious beliefs are. No, you can't let your child die because of blood transfusion beliefs. They're religious based. You know,
okay,
things like that.
Yeah, and it's your right, your fundamental right to think illogically.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't think it would matter if it's a right or not. It's going
to happen. You can't act on it.
You have a right to be nuts. You do.
But is it our duty to challenge that as well?
No.
It's not?
Why should I challenge your nuts?
Because the
impact.
Simply
because you're Baptist.
No, because the impact.
You're a serial killer.
The impact of thinking irrationally manifests itself in many, many subtle ways.
Yeah,
and none of them are good.
Does.
And none of them are good, yeah.
But you can't make it illegal.
You can't make it illegal, but it is our obligation to challenge that when we see it, rather than say, live and let live.
You can make the actions illegal. You know, like the anti-vaxxers and the anti-blood, that should be illegal.
Yes.
Period.
Yes.
I don't care what you believe.
Uh-huh. What should be illegal?
If you don't believe in blood transfusions and you refuse your child to have to let them have one, that's, you know, tough.
They're
shit.
They're trying to kill the child. They medically need assistance.
Or if you do believe in female genital mutilation or child bride or whatever,
for God's sake.
You know, no, sorry,
no,
I don't care.
That's right. That's not legal. Period. You can't do that.
No, we can't do that under the law.
You know,
in this
we're going way off track of what we started out, as
well,
you said.
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all.
Now, let me say that what we're all doing is saying to individually challenge and politically. And political movements, we get nothing done when I say, well, I'm going to challenge that without the organizing the situation. And what I found the last 6 weeks that I've been in the United States and Oregon, which supposedly is a blue state, it's not. And I kept looking at who Oregonians were. They've got 2 Democratic senators, and it's driven by Portland, not anybody else. And looking at the lack of diversity, the lack of organization, and who people were, I found so many, I'm a Trump supporter, I'm a Trump supporter, I'm a Trump supporter. And then one night I was looking at it, and I realized after 5 visits, I own property there, that I looked at this concert and all the people there, no diversity, and talking a lot, It's complacency. It's total complacency across the United States. It's complacency. And when you say, you know, we should challenge this or challenge that, or the churches and tax-free things, you're not going to do a damn thing. I was in politics for a long time. Unless you organize and know how to go to your state capital. The state capital is the place that you have the most power, not the federal government, but it's your state capital. You have the most power. And we can talk all night long, but nothing will change until you organize that.
I think we should organize and say that all atheists are for Trump. What kind of effect do you think that would have nationally? And that Trump himself is an atheist.
But even when you talk about organizing, I think, and we brought this up already, what do we organize around? Do we organize around humanist principles? We don't organize around atheism.
No, you organize.
That's what I was talking about when I said secularism. First of all, when you're talking to people that have a religious belief, if you're trying to truck logic, that's illogical.
You know, frankly, secularism doesn't ring a bell with a lot of people.
They don't know what it is.
Humanism.
At least they will question it.
Well, it rang a bell with the people that set up this country in the first place.
For a long time ago.
Yeah, I don't understand how they could come up with that, maybe because they had faced so many hardships under all the different religious problems.
They were the victims that got out.
Right. So I can't understand how that magically happened, that this country got set up on, I hate to say it, but secular basis.
Well, they were the victims that got out of England that were killing each other.
Well, and the Dutch.
Them too?
And they wanted to impose Puritanism on everybody.
Some did.
Basically, they wanted to
come. Jefferson and et al. Were not Puritan. They were not the people who came over here.
They wanted to come here to practice their religion.
Yeah.
But they didn't.
They were being persecuted in their
right. But the smart people who got in power said, okay, everybody can do that. We're not going to impose a stake religion on you guys because we've seen what's happened in Europe when
practice
that happens.
Practice what religion you want. That's what this country's all about. Right.
Well, maybe, you know, having a state religion does have its benefits because the Queen is the head of the church. She appoints the Archbishop of Canterbury in England or in the United Kingdom. And everyone looks upon religion as another government bureaucracy. So it's tainted by the actual fact that it's that's right. We had to have one day a week of religious instruction by law in public schools. And so it became a drudgery of a bureaucratic nonsense.
So you sang all things bright and beautiful like my children have to do.
Not in school, no. We used to draw in the columns of the Bible.
What did the Muslim kids do?
There weren't any at that time, but there were Catholics, and they could be exempt.
Uh-huh. So unless you were a member of
In
the
fact,
church.
We had morning assembly where we had to sing prayers, and after all the prayers and the reading from the Bible had finished, in would parade the Catholics who had been in a classroom while all this...
Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, everybody here can remember prayer in school. We're all old enough to remember
that.
Well, it was not prayer in school until 1952 with Eisenhower.
It wasn't.
I was born in 53, so I came up with that obligatory Bible verse on the intercom.
No, and there was no under
a
God.
A Pledge of Allegiance.
No, Eisenhower put that in 1952.
Well, maybe he didn't.
Hang on.
He probably had to sign off.
Jack.
A lot of the political problem in the United States is the binary nature of the system as it exists. Because it's not a parliamentary system, that a coalition is formed about specific issues, people are saying, you're either on that side or you're on this side.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The problem is there's no crossover on separate issues. So if one group takes exceptional control of the issue, and we'll have everybody else marching in lockstep with them. Mm-hmm. And the people, frankly, the politicians that are in office don't have the moral courage to say, I'll agree with this on my party, but I'll agree with this, yeah. even though it has nothing to do with what my party says.
Oh, it's very interesting.
I think that's the area that could probably teach, you know, it's like, how do you know when a politician's lying? It's not this movie, right? So the question is, how do you get people involved or understanding of the fact that you can take positions that are different from your political party and still be do the right thing for the rest of the country?
There are two groups, Republicans for Choice and Democrats for Life, which obviously... Republicans for Choice and Democrats for Life.
Oh,
now,
abortion.
Yes, it's, oh, it's, right. it's and it obviously that, bucks right. the party line.
Oh,
right.
But would it be, you know, behoove the Democrats to support the Republicans for Choice as a wedge issue? I don't know. I was thinking about the strategies used by humanists, atheists, whatever collectively we want to call ourselves, against the encroachment of religion into society. You know, we confront it on legal basis. I would think that most of the time, the Freedom From Religion Foundation does it through the courts.
Right. They do it through the courts, yeah.
Angry letters and lawsuits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that a good strategy?
Threatening to sue.
Yes. Is that a good strategy, or
yes.
do you think there are others that could work?
So far, so good.
Yes, yeah,
it works for them.
Of course, yeah,
what else is going to work?
Hmm?
What else is going to work?
Nothing has worked. It may be too late for us, but the Valerie, what you said about the young people,
kids,
the millennials, they have a different way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
See, our political system is so corrupt, we may not be able to change it. Mm-hmm. But they're going to come up, and I predict in 20 years... one of those millennials is going to be a secular humanist.
Absolutely.
He's going to be our president. And everything has changed.
She.
And
as long as they don't change their names,
lock her up.
The LGBT community, it was their time. There was a time. It's not our time yet. Because it's going to be in 15 or 20 years.
It wasn't Hillary. It wasn't.
In the gay community.
Not after
a
black president.
It was a time.
Well, I don't quite agree with that. I mean, you have to make it your time. If you say it's not
so
your
far?
Time,
what
I used to work with people and say,
I've been
we
a secular
can't do
humanist
that.
All my life.
And as soon as you say you can't do
my
that.
My father was a secular humanist.
You can't
humanist.
Do it.
And his grandfather, his father. It's a movement that America, I just say America, is not ready for. Yeah.
But we need to build a scaffolding
because maybe
for
in the interim.
Scaffolding for it.
Yeah.
We are the people building the scaffold.
Maybe.
Well,
we
that's
are
right.
not going to see the completion of the building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we're going to build the scaffold that others can stand on
Good
and
now.
Build
maybe.
Forward.
Yeah.
Well, and that's what I was getting back once again is how do you do that, though? This scaffold that you're building. To me, when you have discussions like this, they're strictly theoretical. They don't do anything.
Yeah, you have to
start. We're all moving towards secular.
Does anyone know about Reverend?
The movement is towards secular.
Does anyone know about Reverend Billy?
No.
Reverend Billy is the pastor. Pastor Reverend Billy is the head of the Church of Shops. Stop Shopping.
Yes. Stop Shopping?
Yes.
And you know about him? Have you seen the movie?
I've seen a lot of his videos. I don't know about.
Yeah, he has a movie out where he eventually ends up in. He does a tour. Okay, he takes a full choir and he imitates basically the Christian evangelical.
Right.
And his point is
consumerism. Yeah.
It's the shopocalypse.
Yeah.
He's predicting the shopocalypse,
yes.
And he ends up in Disneyland, and they sneak in and they get changed in the toilets. And they come out, and they're going down the main street in the main Disney parade, singing all these anti-consumerism. And they made a movie of it.
Yeah.
And I saw it, and I've circulated to my friends. Is there a role for activism of this nature?
Absolutely.
Well,
yes, I would love to speak to that, because I used Eisenhower's Chance for Peace, 1952, speech to Congress,
in which he said that consumerism is going to implode on our culture.
But it's the strategy we're talking about.
He was, to me, Eisenhower is one of my heroes because of his ability to foresee the future, which he did speak in two speeches. And one of them, he warned about consumerism, that it's going to implode on our society. And it causes this kind of mentality that we have.
When we talk about the attitude of activism.
But it takes Disney, it takes a village.
Yeah, I mean, you know, where do we, how do you organize the recruitment of Reverend Billings? He is an extremely charismatic person who is a compelling figure.
In American society.
And it's a shame, I mean, but it, I don't know whether it's worked because two of us have heard of it.
I'm sorry, I missed that name.
Well, how is he regarded?
Who is this person?
Reverend Billy is a activist who is against consumerism.
Is he
so what he did was he co-opted
the
evangelical model.
Right.
And use that as his strategy to attack consumerism.
And that's the problem you have. The United States is probably the peak of consumerism.
It's what we live for.
Yes. And then you've got Mexico, especially like where I live, and they are at the bottom rungs of consumerism. But they like what they see.
But consumerism was only, you know, the example. It could have been anything.
Right.
It's the point is, you know, is there a role for activism and should that be actively promoted in trying to, you know, because it essentially what he does is show up the church for what it is.
Well, Phil, how is he generally regarded? What do people say about him? Is he a nut fringe or is he a valid source? Oh, hey, that's a good idea.
He is, so is he dismissed because of his activism?
Exactly.
Because
that's
ridiculous. Yeah. And is he just preaching to the converted, literally?
Yeah.
I don't know. No, it's a good point. And, Alan?
The next topic for discussion here, bring your movie.
Bring the movie?
Yes.
Bring the movie.
Maybe.
We got a screen.
Good point.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's
a lot of comments. Somebody earlier
asked
about the education.
Okay.
Someone said about stopping religion. The issue is that becomes an adverse contact, which subjects people to becoming retreating and taking their position. I think the issue is to present the concept in terms of freedom from religion as we're not attacking your religion. You can believe what you want to believe. I don't want to convert your thinking.
Right.
If you want to believe what you want to believe, it's okay.
Sure.
But don't put your beliefs on everybody else. Let everybody else, let us have the government be completely neutral in terms of us and not have this creeping bringing your theisms into the government.
So you're advocating just...
So it's non-threatening.
Uh-huh.
It's not only religion.
Freedom of
religion is racism.
It's what?
Racism.
What is?
That has something to do with politics. Racism. Not only religion, which has very little to do. I mean, Kennedy was Catholic, and that was a phenomenon. But now we have the problem of racism. And Trump... in his own way, is subconscious, doesn't like brown people, doesn't want any foreigners who look brown or black in the U.S. And let's face it, we're all here in Mexico. If we are so hell-bent on changing our country for the better, what are we doing here?
It's not subconscious.
We need to change things. Our kids are between 25 and 35 years old, so Gen X and Millennial. When it was time for them to get their driver's licenses, we actually had to insist that they take some courses and get the license. Now, when you were 16, were you like that? What happened? I would love to know what happened in that generation. They don't want cars. Car sales are going way down. They aren't going to church. What happened? If we could tap into what happened that caused them to all turn away from it. And I know our kids all live very frugal, non-materialistic lives. They just don't have that ambition at all.
They don't vote.
And I mean, we were hippies, you know, and then somebody said, you know, going to the bathroom in the trees, I'm sick of it. You know, I want a McMansion and 5 bathrooms. But anyway, and I don't know if it's going to happen with them, but I would really love to know what made the difference, because they are so different than we were at that age.
They're texting. They're texting each other, and without the need for a car.
Social
or that
content.
Kind of. And they're not even conversing one to one. They're texting.
I have millennial kids. They're conversing one to one.
Then there's
no. I mean, we say they've all gone to hell in a handbasket, but they haven't. I mean, some of them are just great, and they're. If we could get them in to vote, they're political. Why is their belief structure shifted so much?
I think that.
And there was no texting when any of them went to get their driver's licenses.
Yeah, I know. But maybe in your situation was very different. But I think you have to look at the. I think you have to look at the larger cultural situation that's happening, and that is the problem of the technology and the distance that they're not creating one-on-one relationships, and they're texting not in a conversational way, but differently than on one-to-one. It's different when you are, as I'm talking to Henry, a different kind of conversation, different than if we were texting each other. And these young people are texting, and there's something vacuous in that texting that's affecting.
Everybody looks at the younger generation and says,
well, you know,
this change is bad. Oh, they're not memorizing anymore because they're using this newfangled reading thing. We don't know if it's bad or not.
It's replacing hanging out together, because we see our kids hanging out with our kids all together.
I don't think
or whether it's just all just filling in the space between the hangouts to stay connected.
I think you have to look at the larger situation.
I have 7 grandchildren in that age.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what it is that makes them. We cannot pinpoint, just like you can't pinpoint and put everybody in the same basket. There are children who are hunting around after a college education for a job. It is true they use the internet, but they still are worrisome about their jobs. Then you have children who are not going to college because they don't feel it's necessary. That they would rather have some business experience, some intern experience, and that will help them in their future. Children today are smarter than we have ever been. And you can thank technology for that. Now, their social graces, that's another story.
Another topic for another time.
One thing we can look forward to is how these youth in that shooting happened. Florida, how they got together.
Organized.
What happened?
Nothing. Well, what was the difference?
Yeah.
They're not done yet.
In terms of the biggest difference that could be.
The old interview system where you send a resume for a job is gone.
Yeah.
So we have to face this as a changing world. It is. We old folks have...
My God, if we could vote on a text, we could capture that vote.
Henry. Okay, I want to just add, the one single biggest thing that could have changed the United States is if Bernie had been elected and college was free.
That's right.
Regardless of who's elected, for that matter. If education and all education through college was free in the United States or in any country... Mm-hmm. Those people coming out of that system are
going to
be much better thinkers, much better reasoners than the ones who opt for trade school or
they don't shut down all the alternatives.
Yeah.
Because
they can think.
The GI Bill was the greatest thing that happened.
That's right. The GI Bill is what made America.
And monetarily also.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly.
So
Henry, did you finish?
No, we need free college.
Yeah.
I want to
bring up, I think, an important point. It goes back to the subject of today. You know, there are right-wing atheists, and we used to have a few. Speaking,
yeah.
Know some. We used to have a few, and eventually they were kind of driven out because they just didn't feel comfortable when politics started coming up. So we needed, you know, we all assume that we're anti-Trump, but there are some atheists that are not anti-Trump. Yeah.
Well, I support some policies that Trump has. Maybe not in the way they're manifested. But I don't believe in an open border policy.
And I do, but you know, this is where atheists can be different people, and
sure.
These subjects, we can't assume that we're all liberals.
Right. When you said right wing, I don't know what that means anymore. What does right wing mean? Does that mean they're monetarily conservative?
I don't think the right wing knows.
We've
just got a few minutes left before I finish. I ask about the future. Are we optimistic? No. What do we consider? There's obviously going to be big change in the future. There's going to be artificial intelligence. Suppose there will be an increase in reason once we have taken the human bias out of decision making, or are we just going to encode the biases?
We encode the biases
in the system.
Yeah, absolutely, it's doing it happening right now.
Yeah.
Okay. May I answer your question?
You may.
Yes. No, I'm not optimistic because listening to Bertrand Russell again, in 1927 he's talking about the solar system and climate change and that humankind will do itself in.
So we don't have to worry about it because we're doomed anyway.
I'm in my 80s. I don't have much further to go. So.
Yeah, I was reading an interesting article not long ago that said that human existence lasts about 100 million years or something like that. Uh-huh. Because it's going to, probably not that, a million years.
It's going to
go up. And then it's going to collapse.
Yeah, to nature, we're probably an aberration.
Well, this is in the universe of civilizations that may, in fact, have evolved on separate planets, on separate stars in the galaxy, and whatever. But we won't see them because they're too far away, and they're just they've collapsed by the time ours come up, and so. We may not exist at the same time.
I just hope my energy takes me to some other place that's much more peaceful.
Any thoughts on the future?
You're not an atheist.
Yeah, short-term outlook is poor, long-term outlook good.
Okay.
I think the next 20 to 50 years...
Scattered evolution and occasional creationism.
I think it's going to be pretty rough for a while. But,
it is, yeah.
But in the end, we'll figure it out.
And when the end comes... Will that signify an end to superstitious thought?
No, it'll never end. But it can become insignificant.
Okay.
They become like the flat earthers. They're still there, but nobody notices them.
Yeah.
No. I do think if E.T. comes, it will have a profound influence on our religion. Because then they'll have to rethink everything. Reshuffle everything.
That's never been a problem for them.
No.
Just incorporate it. They'll find some excuse.
They'll show you the verse that predicted it.
They found life on Mars. Well, that was God's, you know, laboratory. You know, it was just getting it ready for.
Since I heard Ezekiel, that was going to happen.
Yes.
How about if we just go extinct, like the dinosaurs?
Yes.
There's no guarantee. There's no guarantee. There's no.
Can't support life anymore, and people's going to die off.
Right now, we're doing our very best to become Venus.
Yeah.
And some of the species will take the reins. Take the reins.
We'll evolve into some kind of illiterate walking again.
All the cockroaches will be sat around the table going, exactly. Oh, what do you think about the great cockroach in the Any more? It's 5:30, so any more comments? Okay.
I think we have a good clear atheism, the new religion. And
me too.
Much. to watch out for all those people who are going to become atheists, because there's a lot of changes in young people today about God and religion.
Yep.
So who knows what, if you open up that idea, what will happen.
And changes in women with the Me Too movement.
Time. It's the birth of humanity, and it's going to stay. But like Catholicism, which came out of this, and Christianity, which has seven or eight different sects, who knows what will happen with humanism.
You know, once again, going back to the original premise of this meeting, I see no enthusiasm for trying to become political.
Give money to the Freedom from Religion Foundation.
Say again.
Give money to the Freedom from Religion Foundation.
Wear the t-shirt.
I think that's almost a nothing proposition.
We don't have much, but we have that.
Yeah. Well, and you teach your kids. And you proselytize rationality.
But if you want to give it to an organization that's actually doing something,
yeah.
Give it to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well,
I'm a member.
I just changed a woman from Georgia, came here on vacation, and she's with HUD. And her upset was HUD that does not change the amount of money is given from, 30 years ago. And I explained to her when she gets back to Georgia exactly what she should do and how she does it. And so you can do it. And so she never thought about organizing them and going to the Capitol and pulling their senators and House people off the floor and doing this. And so now she's excited because she never thought, unfortunately, we do not think we have power with the government. The government's over here and we're over here. And we don't know how to affect the government. And I do. And so I was really happy she's going back on Saturday and think, okay, knowing how to organize it, you get the poor people and drive up from Warner Robins to the Capitol and you pull your representatives and you have impact. You have impact. And the greatest thing to do is fifth graders. If you can impact fifth graders in the classroom where they have television with what's going on in their legislature, they have power. And teach them how they have power.
Well, I think we should rebrand ourselves as atheists.
Atheisms.
Right. We spell the O with a zero.
It's a snake.
I don't know. Dumb it down.
That's very millennial.
I think if we could change the whole world, atheists are in depression.
Next month,
so we're still talking about having taking action. Well, this group was never formed.
No.